Behold, his reward is with him and his recompense before him. He will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs in his arms. He will carry them in his bosom and gently lead those that are with young. What a beautiful passage. As he tells us to look at the God of Israel, coming in his might and in all of his strength, in all of his splendor. And then when we turn to look, we see a shepherd taking little lambs in his arms, leading gently those that are with young. Look at Matthew 23. The familiar statement in verse 37, the lament of Jesus over Jerusalem, as we noticed last Sunday evening. Matthew 23:37, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, killing the prophets and stoning those who are sent to you, how often I would have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you would not. And then, do you remember the story of the prodigal son? When the prodigal son returned home to his father, Jesus described the joy of his father by saying that the father ran to meet the young man when he was afar off, and he fell on his neck, and he kissed him much. Now, what is the common bond between all three of these descriptions of God? The common bond, the common denominator, is that we gather that the God whom we serve is a God who touches. He's a God who carries in his bosom. He's a God who gently leads. He's a God who would gather children together like a hen gathers her brood under her wings. He's a God who runs to the prodigal son and falls on his neck and kisses him. They have in common this one single thing, that our God is a God who touches. But you might ask, is that really important? Yes, it is. More so perhaps than we are aware of until it's pointed out to us, and then we see how very important it really is. How important is it that a mother touches and kisses a child when it's hurt? The words, let mother kiss it. Man, they have a healing power all their own. And then when she takes that little darling up and kisses that sore, the one that the skin knee, everything is all right. On the other hand, what kind of an impression do you get? What kind of vibrations do you get when someone refuses to shake hands with you? When you extend your hand and they just pull back and won't shake hands with you. You get the message? Yeah. Or when a son or a daughter, when you walk up and put your hand upon their shoulder, and as in Zechariah, they pull away the shoulder. What happens and what kind of a message do you get? That's sad. Or what kind of vibrations do you get when the wife says to her husband, don't you ever touch me again? That's bad news, friends, if you haven't already figured it out. That's about as serious as you can get. Don't you ever touch me again. So it is important. When Jesus came showing us God, he came to a people who didn't touch anybody much. John records in John, the 4th chapter, that the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Now, John uses this to explain the surprise of the woman when Jesus asked her for a drink of water. She said, how is it that you, a Jew, ask water from me, a woman from Samaria? And then John puts in parenthesis, for the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. They do not touch Samaritans. And of course, they wouldn't touch a sinner, nor would they think of letting a sinner touch them. On one occasion, Jesus was asked to the home of Simon the Pharisee. And he went to eat dinner with him, and they were reclining at table. And this woman, as Luke describes her in the book of Luke, he says that she was a woman of the city, a sinner. And when she heard that Jesus was at table in Simon's house, she came in and knelt by his feet and began to weep over his feet and to wipe them with her hair. And she took this flask of ointment and poured it over his feet and anointed him. And it says that Simon, when he saw what was happening, he said, if this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of woman this is that's touching him. And he was astonished. He was flabbergasted that Jesus would let this woman of the city touch him and kiss his feet. It blew his mind. He couldn't quite get over that. On other occasions, we find Jesus rebuking the people because they loaded the people with burdens and they wouldn't move them with one of their little fingers. Still again, in Luke, the 18th chapter, Jesus tells about the Pharisee and the publican who went up to the temple to pray. The Pharisee stood there praying with himself, Jesus says, and he prayed and he was so thankful that he was who he was and how glad he was that he was as good as he was and how glad God ought to be for having him on his side is about the impression you get. And then it says, and the publican stood afar off. He kept in his place. He knew where his place was. He knew that his place wasn't up near where that Pharisee was. And he was so overwhelmed with his own unworthiness to be in the presence of God, he just simply smote himself on the breast and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. But the significant statement here is that he stood afar off. Not afar off from God. He stood afar off from this Pharisee. Oh, there are so many other places that show where the people fail to be a touching people. Jesus told the parable of the Samaritan and how that he came along the road where this man had been wounded. There were two other men that had passed along the road before this Samaritan, though. They were a priest and a Levite. But these two men, it says, they went by on the other side of the road. They passed by on the other side of the road. They didn't think about touching him. He might have been dead. They wouldn't consider touching a dead person. But nevertheless, in the parable, these two men are pictured as going by on the other side of the road. It was not unusual that they treated this man in need in this manner. We find in Matthew, the 5th chapter, that Jesus described these people as being a people who loved those who loved them and hated those who hated them. Loving their neighbors, hating their enemies, and they determined who was their enemy and who was their neighbor. And when it was asked, who is my neighbor, Jesus told this parable of the Good Samaritan. And he indicted these two men, the priest and the Levite, because they just didn't meet the needs of that man who needed their touch. But when the Good Samaritan came, it says he was moved with compassion. He went to the man, bound up his wounds, pouring upon them oil and wine. And you can just see the tender, loving touch of this man as he smoothed the hurt and as he poured on the oil and the wine and wrapped gently the gauze around his head and set him upon his own beast and took him to the inn and took care of him. Touching. But because there was this lack of touch among the people of Jesus' day, there was a gradually enlarging gulf and chasm that developed between people, and alienation and separation and separation began to develop until finally a whole caste, a whole cult, a whole separate group of people were set apart and were alienated from each other, not just one group against the other, but group after group after group, until finally there was this tremendous alienation in the whole people of Jerusalem, the whole people of the Jews. They just didn't touch much of anybody. And then here came this fellow from Galilee. When Jesus came among this people who didn't touch, he came touching everybody. In fact, they were astonished at him. And they looked at John the Baptist, who was, in effect, a hermit. And they didn't like that. They could see that being a hermit wasn't the thing. And Jesus said, "You here came John, neither eating nor drinking, and you say he has a demon." But then he says, "The Son of Man came both eating and drinking, and you say a glutton and a wine bibber, or a drunkard, a friend of publicans and sinners." And that was Jesus' mode of life. That was his operation. He was always among people. I wish that we could see in 3D, full color, the social life of the Lord Jesus Christ. He came touching people. He came being touched by people. He came so near the crowd and among them to where people felt at ease, touching him, being with him, touching his garments, touching his shoulder, touching his hand. There are so many occasions that I won't have time to mention them tonight. One of them especially interests us, and let me just tell you briefly. Do you remember after the healing of the demoniac, Jesus came over into Capernaum, and the ruler of the synagogue there, his name was Jairus. And he came to Jesus and says, "My daughter is at the point of death, but if you'll come and touch her, she'll be healed." And so Jesus said, "All right, I'll follow you." So they were on their way to the man's house. And while they were going, a woman who had an issue of blood for 12 years thought, if I can just touch the hem of his garment, I'll be made well. So she came up behind him and reached out and touched his tassels on his garment. And Jesus said, "Who touched me?" He looked around and his disciples said, "Lord, you see all these people milling around you and pressing on you, and you ask who touched you?" He said, "No, somebody touched me." And the woman came trembling for fear and fell down, knowing what had happened to her. And he said, "Woman, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." But the point I want you to notice is that there he was out among the people being touched, touching. It was just something common with him. There was not anything strange to him about touching or being touched. They brought their children to him. They brought the little babies to him, wanting him to touch them, the record says in the book of Luke, chapter 18 and verse 15. They wanted him to touch them. He even touched the untouchables. On one occasion, right after he left the house of Jairus, after he had raised Jairus' daughter, he went on after the woman touched him and went on to the house of Jairus and healed his daughter and left the house. And immediately after that, there came a man, a blind man, and said, "If you want to, you can heal me." And so Jesus, it says, touched his eyes. He touched his eyes. And the man regained his sight. On still another occasion, as they were returning from Tyre and Sidon, they came through the Decapolis area, the 10-city area, and came to the Sea of Galilee. And where along this area that this happened, I don't know. It doesn't say specifically. But there were some people who had a friend of theirs who had an impediment in his speech. And he couldn't hear. And those usually go together. And so they besought Jesus to heal him. For some reason or other, Jesus took him away from the crowd, took him outside the city, one record says, away from everybody, in private, and he put his fingers in his ears. And he touched his tongue. I'd like for you to do that. Take the person next to you and put your finger in his ear, if you would, please. You know that. Or still better, reach out and touch his tongue. Wouldn't that be awful? Still worse than that, how would you like for the person to have done to him what Jesus did, really? Jesus had said, "Spit on his," he spit and touched the man's tongue. Well, it's a bit gross in a sense. You don't think much about the Lord spitting, but it says he spat. That's past tense for spit. That's what it is. It said he spat and put it on this man's tongue. Now, what the significance of that was, I don't know. But all I'm trying to get you to see is that he touched people. He touched the untouchables. He touched the blind. He touched the deaf. He touched those who were unspeaking. They couldn't hear well. They couldn't speak well. He touched their tongue, their ears, their eyes. And then on one occasion, right after the Sermon on the Mount, it says this leper came to him and said, "Lord, if you want to, you can heal me." And Jesus said, "I do want to." And he says he reached out and touched him. And he was cleansed of his leprosy. I wonder how long it had been since someone had touched this man. You see, the leper had to cry. When he came near anyone, he had to cry, "Tommy, Tommy," and cover himself because he was unclean. And people would just run from the lepers. Jesus didn't run. He touched him. Now, there's something communicated in all this. And what is communicated is that we do not have a high priest who cannot be touched with the feelings of our weaknesses, but one who in all points, like we are, was tempted and yet without sin. And we get the impression that Simon Peter recorded when he says that we ought to cast all of our anxieties upon him because he cares about you. Jesus was known by Simon Peter. Peter knew what kind of a man he was. So he just simply says from his own personal experience, cast all your anxieties upon him. He cares about you. And what's communicated is simply this. His genuine care and concern, his love, is communicated by this touch. But let me ask really again now, just how important is this caring touch? There are two ways in which it's important as we look at Jesus and as we look at ourselves. Number one, as we look at Jesus in his claims to be God, I believe that this caring kind of touch that he always possessed and was willing to give to other people, this is evidence of his divinity. Now, why? Because the need of the human being to be touched by another human being is genuine and very basic to the human being's existence. There's a statement in a book called The Human Touch, Who Needs It? And in it, the author says, every human being needs to touch and be touched. Each of us has thoughts and feelings so deep and personal that words will simply not bear their weight. And yet we long to communicate them, to share them with another. Our most intense joy is amplified and given permanence by being shared. Our deepest fears and anxieties are made endurable and manageable by being shared. But they can only be truly shared in their full depth and significance when they are shared in the totality of who we are. They cry out for touch. We need to touch. Some years ago, in a South American orphanage, the little babies who were in the orphanage began to die one by one, and they could not identify what the cause was, and nor could they stop it. The children were just dying one by one. They looked at them. There was no seemingly no disease. They couldn't figure out what the matter was. The children just lost interest in their food. They lost interest in their toys. And they gradually just dwindled and wasted away until they died. Dr. Renee Spitz records this strange phenomena. And a team of UN doctors was in the country, and they invited the doctors from the United Nations Corps to come in and see this strange phenomenon, and so they came in, and they observed for some days, and then they wrote out this prescription. Every hour on the hour, each child is to be picked up and cuddled and kissed and played with, and then he's to be cuddled and kissed some more. What a strange prescription. But they followed it. Each child, then every hour on the hour, or whenever his time came during that hour, he was picked up by the nursing attendants and kissed and cuddled and played with and kissed and hugged some more. And this strange malady disappeared. The children got their interest back in their food. They played with their toys. And when their 10 minutes came, they just reached out their hands in eager anticipation for being held and touched and cuddled and kissed. The UN doctors described the malady as being what they call marasmus. And it affects the very young and the very old when those who are in between don't show them enough love, when they don't touch. It is important. Now, how is it important as it relates to the identity of Jesus? Well, when I see that this is a number one human need, that you really can't live and prosper without it, and when I see this one who came to us claiming to be the God that made us, when I see him then coming among us, touching us and caring for us and gently nursing us, and when I see him doing that, and his claim to be God stands out, you know, and he's claiming to be God among us, when I see him filling this very basic human need, his claim to be God, in my estimation, is verified. What would have happened, in your thinking, if Jesus had been one of these very straight-laced ones who separated himself from people, kept himself behind closed doors, and simply gave edicts and teaching through his apostles, but nobody ever got to see him and nobody was ever touched by him? No, he would have failed the test, because one of the basic human needs is to be touched by another human being. And Jesus came and broke down those walls and touched people, and they knew for sure he really and truly loved them. Well, how important is it in determining if God is among us? The same. When Jesus gave instructions on who my neighbor is, he said, you go and do likewise. He told of the story of the Good Samaritan and how he went to the man and touched him and healed him, you know, and put all the bandages on him and put him on his own beast and took him and cared for him. He said, now you go and do likewise. And then in Matthew, the 25th chapter, the story of the judgment shows that the kingdom of God is reserved for those who reach out and touch. So when you see the Son of Man, when he comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he'll sit upon his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he'll separate them one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he'll place the sheep at his right hand, but the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, come, O blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For for I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. The kingdom of God is reserved. It is prepared for those people who reach out and touch the hungry, the sick, the poor, the afflicted, the imprisoned. This is what the kingdom of God is all about. It's reserved for people who do this, who touch and reach out and care for other people. Is this a caring church? Is this a touching church or not? Well, that's the question that we need to answer. Jesus was a touching God, and he met this most basic human need. If we're his people, should we not then imitate him and be a touching people, a communicating people, a caring people? Are we friendly or cold? Are we hospitable or are we exclusive? Do we bring people in or do we shut them out? How long has it been since you had someone in your home for a meal, someone who really needed it? I don't mean one of your friends. I'm talking about someone who needs a meal, who maybe doesn't need the meal. They just need the hospitality. They need to feel like they're accepted and that they're welcomed and wanted. How long has it been? How long has it been since you, perhaps as a teacher, in a genuine way, sat down and talked with a student that you suspected was in need? How long has it been since you, as a student, stopped and talked to a teacher that you felt like was having a hard time with his course? Are you a touching, caring person? How long has it been since you reached out as in warmth to a person who was an outsider in the community or on campus? How long has it been since you reached out and touched a person who was ostracized socially? You know, he was really kind of an oddball. So alone, so in need, so lonesome. How long has it been since you just went over and said, "Why don't you come on, let's go get a Coke?" How long has it been since you asked a girl for a date? It's the same thing. Same problem. The longing for social acceptance, the longing for social needs, the longing for fellowship, for companionship. Are you a touching person? Are you a caring person? Well, Jesus would have encouraged all of this, and he wants us to follow his example. When Jesus came to show us God, he came touching. He came among a people who didn't touch very much, but he came touching and giving us that example. Tonight, he comes and touches us in many ways. He touches us physically with our daily needs. He has prepared our table. He's given us friends along the way. He has lifted us up out of sin. He lifts us by his hand, and we find ourselves being not only touched by him, but we find ourselves being able to touch him in a sense, not physically, but through the years we've been given a message through the word that allows us to reach out and in a sense grasp a hold of who this God is. And he has beautifully condescended to allow us to touch him. Tonight we're offering an invitation that will be something of an encouragement to simply each other to see who this Jesus is and see who he is as we see who we are then and implement who he is in our lives. Find out who Jesus is and worship him, will you? And then upon worshiping him, will you go out from here and imitate him? And if you look at him enough, you will imitate him without knowing it. You'll become like him. And so tonight, as we look at this great God who is described in such magnificent power, and yet when we turn and see him, we see him as a one who picks up little lambs and carries them in his bosom, puts those in his arms who are not able to walk, and then leads those that are with young gently. This is the picture that we gain of the God of heaven. Jesus gave it to us. Let's be thankful and let's worship him. Tonight, the invitation is yours. If you're hurting, if you need someone to touch you and to care for you, to reach out, would you come and express that? We'll not just leave you here on the front seat. Let's tonight make sure that we take whatever time is necessary to meet your needs. And if you are not ashamed to come forward and say, "I just need to talk," come on, let's talk. We've got people that are just more than willing to talk with you and to listen to you. Whatever may be your needs, would you come while we stand and sing?